Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Awesome. Today, we're stepping into the Book of Esther.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, it's a wild ride.
Definitely.
We're going to be looking at specifically the first few chapters of Dr. Elaine Phillips's lecture series.
She's great.
She really is, yeah. Right from the start.
Right away.
You get this, like, incredible over-the-top intro to King Xerxes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he rules 127 provinces.
127.
Can you imagine the ego on this guy?
I mean, it really makes you think, what does that kind of power do to a person? And Dr. Phillips points that out. It's, you know, it's not just the land. It's like he needs this constant validation of his importance. Like every title, every, you know, gold goblet, it's all feeding that ego.
It's like that saying, heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Yeah.
But maybe in this case, it's more like heavy is the ego that wears the crown.
Huh.
But speaking of heavy, there's this interesting connection to the themes of honor and royalty that Dr. Phillips talks about.
Oh, absolutely. Like she brings up these Hebrew words, yakar, caved, kavoid, all about weight, about like tangible glory.
Uh-huh.
Think of it this way. The heavier your honor, the more influence you have in this court. Right. It's like status is everything.
And there's even this fascinating detail about like the liver being involved.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we usually think of the heart as, you know, the seat of emotions.
Right.
But Dr. Phillips, she explains that in ancient Hebrew, thought the liver was seen as this like core part of you.
It was. Yeah. So when the text talks about honor being heavy on someone's liver.
Yeah.
It's talking about their like their deepest sense of self-worth. Their pride.
You can see how that sets the stage for some serious drama.
Oh, for sure.
Especially when you consider the geography and the timeline we're dealing with. Like the Persian Empire, massive, stretching from India to Ethiopia, 5th century BC.
Big empires, even bigger egos.
Totally. And within this vast empire, you have these subtle digs at Xerxes' power.
Oh, for sure.
Like, he may rule 127 provinces, but he can't even control what happens in his own palace garden.
It's like the text is hinting at the limitations of his power.
Yeah.
Maybe even like foreshadowing his eventual downfall.
Maybe. And there's this other interesting thing. The Hebrew text and the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, offer slightly different introductions.
Interesting.
The Septuagint includes this apocalyptic dream that Mordecai has.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah, what about that?
It's wild. So it foreshadows conflict, hints at Mordecai's role as protector.
Mm.
It adds this whole other layer of intrigue.
So we've got this powerful king with a massive ego.
Yes.
Hints of trouble brewing and a possible prophecy. This is like a recipe for disaster.
Totally.
And then we get to the banquet.
Oh, the banquet.
Xerxes throws this lavish feast.
180 days.
180 days of nonstop partying.
That's a long party.
I can barely handle a three-day weekend.
Right. And then on the seventh day, he commands Queen Vashti to appear.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly wearing nothing but her crown.
Like, it's such a power move.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to show off his most prized possession, basically.
Totally.
But then Vashti refuses.
What?
I know. I was cheering for her.
Me too. What do you think was going through her head?
Well, Dr. Phillips points out that it was probably a mix of things. I mean, there's the potential humiliation, right?
Being
paraded around.
Like an object.
Exactly. And I can't imagine that went over well with the other women at the banquet either.
No. Not at all.
Yeah.
Could reflect on all Persian women.
Right.
But to find the king, she's like challenging their whole patriarchal society.
It's a powerful act of resistance.
It is.
But it comes at a price.
Big time.
Xerxes is furious.
Oh, yeah. His ego is bruised.
And he doesn't know what to do.
And that's where Memucan, his advisor, steps in. He shifts the focus away from the king's embarrassment to a wider social issue.
Oh, clever.
Right. He warns that, like, Vashti's defiance could make all the women rebel.
It's like fear-mongering at its finest.
Not really.
And it works.
Of course.
Xerxes buys it.
Hook, line, and sinker.
So he banishes Vashti.
What?
And he issues this decree saying, essentially, ladies, learn from Vashti and obey your husbands.
Wow.
It's such a desperate attempt to reassert control.
Through fear and control.
Exactly. So Vashti's out.
Okay.
And now Xerxes needs a new queen.
Uh-huh.
Someone who will embody his power and his control.
Of course.
That's where the beauty pageant idea comes in.
Oh, the beauty pageant.
Young, beautiful, and importantly, virginal.
The classic recipe for a queen.
Right. But that's where our heroes enter the picture.
Oh, yes.
Mordecai and Esther.
Tell me about them.
Well, Mordecai is a Jew from the tribe of Benjamin, raising his cousin Esther.
Okay.
Who's also known by her Hebrew name, Hadassah.
Okay, so this is where it gets really interesting. Dr. Phillips, like, dives deep into Mordecai's family tree, tracing his lineage back to King Saul.
Really?
And remember that apocalyptic dream we talked about?
Yes.
Maybe that dream's connected to his ancestry.
Hmm, that's
it adds another layer, like, maybe he's destined for something big.
Wow.
A confrontation, maybe.
And what about Esther? What about her two names?
Well, Hadassah, it means myrtle.
Okay.
It's associated with peace and replacing thorns. So it's like she has the potential to bring harmony to this chaotic situation.
I like that.
Her Persian name, Esther, is more mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
Some people connect it to Ishtar, the goddess of love and war.
Wow.
Others think it just means star.
Okay, so Esther, this young woman with a hidden identity.
Right.
And a potentially prophetic lineage.
A lot.
Gets swept up in this queen-seeking frenzy.
That's a lot to handle.
And Mordecai, knowing the dangers, he warns her to keep her Jewish heritage secret.
Oh, that's...
What do you think's going through his mind?
I think he understands how precarious it is for the Jews in Persia. You know, there's that constant fear of being seen as different, as dangerous.
It's a reminder that even in a powerful empire, certain groups are vulnerable.
Exactly. And it foreshadows what's to come. He knows that her hidden identity could be a liability.
Yeah, for her and for the whole Jewish community.
Totally.
So Esther enters the harem a year of beauty treatments.
Oh my gosh.
A year. Can you imagine?
It's not a spa day, you know? It's about conforming.
Right, right.
Erasing any individuality.
But what's interesting is that Esther, she's different.
Oh, how so?
She doesn't demand gifts or try to stand out. She follows Haggai's guidance, you know, the eunuch in charge. Okay. It's like quiet confidence, grace.
That sets her apart.
And it works.
It does.
She wins over Haggai.
Wow.
And eventually the king.
She becomes queen.
She does. But even as Esther rises to power.
Yeah.
Mordecai. He stays outside the palace.
Yes, he doing.
Keeping watch at the king's gate.
The gate? Why the hate?
Well, the gate's not just an entrance. It's like a hub of information.
Okay.
Like the king's Twitter feed.
Got it.
Mordecai's position gives him access to information.
Uh-huh.
And that's where he overhears a plot.
A plot.
To assassinate Xerxes.
Oh, no.
An assassination plot. Okay, so we've got a queen in place.
Right.
A potential prophecy.
Hmm.
And now an assassination plot.
Oh, like a recipe for disaster.
So what happens next?
Well, Mordecai, he doesn't waste any time. He reports it. The assassins are dealt with.
Okay.
You'd think that would be it. Crisis averted.
Right.
But you know how it is.
There's always another obstacle.
Always something, right?
Yeah.
And this time, it's Haman.
Oh, Haman. Okay, so.
Remember how Dr. Phillips talked about Mordecai's family, like going all the way back to King Saul?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out Haman's a descendant of Agag.
Agag.
The Amalekite king that Saul was supposed to destroy.
So this isn't just a personal dislike.
No.
This is like generations of feud.
Oh, yeah. It's biblical history playing out in Persia.
Wow. It's a reminder that those old prejudices, historical grievances, they can like stick around.
They fester. They can erupt even centuries later.
Yeah. And Haman, he's a high-ranking official.
All right.
And Xerxes gives him this huge promotion.
Okay.
Orders everyone to bow down to him.
Everyone.
Except Mordecai.
Why? Is it just the family feud?
Well, Dr. Phillips suggests it might be about his faith.
Okay.
You know, there's that tradition of only bowing to God.
Right.
So for Mordecai, bowing to Haman, that's like violating that principle.
It's a matter of conscience.
Yeah, staying true to his beliefs, even when it's dangerous.
But Haman, he's not happy about it.
I can imagine. But why go after all the Jews?
It's terrifying, actually.
Mm.
Haman's rage, it goes from a personal grudge to a, like, genocidal plan.
Oh, wow.
He manipulates Xerxes, plays on his fears, claims the Jews are disloyal.
It's chilling how prejudice, fueled by anger and ambition, can turn into something so horrific.
And it's not just happening randomly. It's deliberate manipulation.
Exploiting societal tensions.
Exactly. And he even offers to pay, like, a ton of money to the treasury.
It's like he's trying to legitimize the hate.
Make it a financial benefit.
And Xerxes falls for it.
He does.
Blinded by the lies, maybe his own prejudices.
It happens.
He gives his approval. They cast lots to choose the date.
Purim.
Purim in Hebrew. And the decree goes out across the empire.
That detail about the lots, It's important.
How so?
It emphasizes, like, the randomness of this persecution.
Yeah, yeah.
The Jewish people, their fate's just hanging in the balance.
It's a terrifying thought.
Imagine being the Jewish community, getting this news.
Like, devastating.
Dr. Phillips talks about how Mordecai, he tears his clothes, puts on sackcloth and ashes.
Wow.
Goes around the city wailing.
That's a powerful image.
It is. And it's not just him. It's the whole community.
The collective trauma.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, Esther's in the palace.
Oblivious.
Totally unaware of the danger.
Like she's in a bubble.
In the
what? She sends someone to find out what's wrong with Mordecai.
Oh.
And she's hit with the truth.
It's a turning point.
Now, she's not just a queen.
Yeah.
She's a Jew facing annihilation.
Her hidden identity, it's a burden now.
It could cost her everything.
What does she do?
Mordecai urges her to talk to the king.
To
use her position to save them.
But that's dangerous.
Extremely dangerous.
Wait, she could be killed.
Exactly. Stay silent. Risk her people. Speak up. Risk her own life.
That's an impossible choice.
And Mordecai, he says to her, who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this.
Wow, that's powerful.
It's like, embrace your destiny.
Use your power for good.
Even when it's scary.
And she does.
She does.
She decides to approach the king.
But first, she asks all the Jews to fast and pray.
Oh, wow.
For 3 days.
It's spiritual solidarity.
Yeah, facing destruction, they turn to prayer.
Seeking strength.
It's a reminder that even in the darkest times,
mm-hmm.
faith can provide hope.
It's a powerful belief. So after 3 days, she puts on her royal robes.
Okay.
And she approaches the king's inner court.
This is it.
What happens? Does he welcome her? Does he order her death?
Well, he sees her standing there.
Uh-huh.
And he extends his golden scepter.
He spares her.
He does. And he asks her what she wants.
Anything.
Up to half his kingdom.
It's like a fairy tale.
It is, but this is her moment to plead for her people.
Does she?
Not yet. She invites him and Haman to a banquet.
A banquet?
Why the delay? Strategy. Mm-hmm. Buying time.
I mean, it's risky, right?
It's definitely a calculated move.
Yeah.
Dr. Phillips, she makes the argument that it's brilliant, really. Like, by inviting Haman to the banquet, Esther basically makes him think he's still in the king's good graces.
It's a trap.
Exactly. Tightening the noose before you know.
You mentioned a noose.
Okay.
And it made me think of what Dr. Phillips said about the banquets.
Oh, yeah.
The ones in chapter one,
right.
And then chapters 5 and 7.
What about them?
They're all so similar. There's this excess, things spiraling out of control.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Just like with Vashti.
Exactly.
So much drinking, lavish displays.
Yeah, yeah.
The king seems to be losing it a little.
Like, it's all foreshadowing.
Ooh, foreshadowing what?
A reversal of fortune.
Interesting.
Okay, so first banquet.
Right.
Esther doesn't say anything about why she's really there.
Right.
Then she invites them to a second banquet.
The suspense is killing me.
But that night.
Yeah.
Xerxes can't sleep.
He can't sleep.
He can't sleep. So he asks for the royal chronicles to be read to him.
Okay.
And guess what they come across? The story of Mordecai uncovering the assassination plot.
Oh, wow. Talk about a coincidence.
Or is it? It's like divine providence is at work, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You're reminding Xerxes about Mordecai right when he needs to remember.
It's that hiddenness and revelation thing again.
Mordecai's heroism was hidden.
Until now.
Until now. And so Xerxes wants to honor Mordecai.
Okay.
And at that exact moment, Haman shows up.
Oh, no.
To ask the king for something.
Oh, the timing.
Right. And Xerxes, he has no idea what Haman wants.
Mm.
So he asks him, how should he honor someone he really likes?
Oh, I bet Haman thought it was about him.
I know, right? So Haman suggests a parade.
A parade.
Through the city.
Okay.
The honoree gets to wear robes, ride the king's horse.
It's like he's planning his own celebration.
Totally. And Xerxes, he loves the idea.
Oh, no.
He says, great, do all that for Mordecai.
Haman must have been furious.
I know. Forced to honor his enemy.
Talk about poetic justice.
It's like what goes around comes around.
It really is.
Yeah.
And foreshadowing Haman's downfall.
Totally. So then second banquet,
okay.
Haman's there, still trying to recover from that parade.
Right.
And finally, the truth comes out.
Esther tells him.
She tells him everything.
Wow, brave.
She reveals she's Jewish,
mm-hmm.
exposes Haman's plan to kill her people.
It's such a tense scene.
It is. Esther's risking it all.
She really is.
To save her people.
Yeah. Powerful.
And it's like she's embodying those qualities of Hadassah.
Oh. Yeah.
Peace, replacing the thorns of hatred.
I like that.
And Xerxes.
What about him?
He's enraged.
Of course.
He orders Haman hanged on the gallows Haman built for Mordecai.
Whoa, that's some serious poetic justice.
Right. Those who dig a pit for others.
All into it themselves.
Exactly. And with Haman gone, Xerxes, he gives Mordecai and Esther power.
To do what?
Issue a new decree.
Okay.
Allows the Jews to defend themselves.
They can fight back.
Even take revenge.
Wow.
The day meant for their destruction
becomes a day of celebration.
Yeah.
The book of Esther, it's really about hope.
In the face of adversity.
And faith and courage.
It makes you think, what prejudices are we ignoring today?
Oh, that's a good question.
How can we use our own voices to help others?
That's what Esther did.
She did. Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the book of Esther.
It's been fun.
It has. We hope you learned something and maybe it'll spark some reflection for you.
Always good to reflect.
It is. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep diving deep.